It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, and with me right now, my good buddy and friend, my confidant, my pal, Kyle from the Grange Barber. How are you?
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down
I am. I'm one of the Golden Girls. I'll be darker.
Your heart is gold. You're a pal and a confidant.
Yeah, I think you're Blanche, which that sounds like a Facebook game. Which Golden Girl are you?
Dude.
Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, guys. I hope y'all are.
Yeah,
we have some, we're going to do our round table. By the way, before we start doing that, let's give our guest who we got on today, Bubba.
Yeah, with number 17 Cincinnati headed to Greenville this weekend, we'll catch up with Chad Brindle. He's with UC's 24/7 site, the Bearcats Journal. So we'll talk to him, get some insight on the Bearcats, and then we'll also catch up with a well-known sports writer in the state of North Carolina, also Bonesville.net and Dunn Area Sports, Al Myatt.
All right, guys, we have some breaking news. So I want to go ahead and get that in the roundtable first. Bubba, take it away.
Yeah, just a few minutes ago, that being just before 5 p.m. on Thursday the 31st, we found out that Dr. Ron Mitchelson, who's been the provost and senior vice chancellor for academic affairs since 2015, and he's been at ECU in a variety of capacities since 1999, so two decades as a Pirate, he is the new interim chancellor.
Yeah, sounds like a safe hire, or a safe appointment, I guess you would say. Coming off of what happened with Chancellor Gerlach and somebody who's a Pirate that I don't know anything about Dr. Mitchelson, but he's been here 20 years. I'm assuming most people like him. So, feels like a pretty safe, appointment and, probably a smart move. I mean, without doing more research on him, I hope he's pro athletics. But you know, probably a pretty smart decision there to make him interim chancellor and see where we go from here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I agree. I think it, under the circumstances, without diving into it deeper, it seems like a safe hire and probably a pretty good appointment for the interim chancellor's position.
Yeah, and you always wonder, you always hear, you know, the old rule of thumb is if you want the job permanently, don't take it on an interim basis. And I don't know how much truth there is to that. But it'll be interesting to see how it goes from here. And, you know, I'm curious to know why, you know, we appointed one interim chancellor. Now we're appointing another interim chancellor. You know, at what point are we going to hire a permanent chancellor? I mean, what is the, what's the holdup on conducting a search, vetting people properly, and getting a permanent chancellor in here? I don't understand that. I mean, it's just, you know, I don't know when that's going to be done.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how swiftly we move, but that's what hopefully we'll make sure we're thorough with as far as the vetting process and get the right guy in here and make sure we're headed in the right direction as a university.
Yeah, and maybe it'll be Mitchelson. Maybe he'll be here for the long haul. I mean, who knows? I mean, it's, you know, we'll see. Certainly, again, without, like you said, diving into it further, it sounds like someone that most people can probably get behind.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And kind of switching gears to athletics, the main thing going on this week is number 17 Cincinnati's coming to Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium. Pirates looking to pull off what would be an enormous upset, their first victory over a ranked opponent since, I guess, 2014 when we knocked off North Carolina. They were actually 25th when we hung 70 on them that day.
I forgot about that, Bubba. They were actually ranked 25th in one poll. I believe it was the coaches' poll.
Yeah.
25th in.
Yeah, I can't recall for sure whether it was coaches or AP, but nonetheless, they were 25th in one poll. And like you said, a lot of folks probably think that win up at Virginia Tech a week earlier was the last win over a ranked opponent, but it was actually North Carolina.
Yeah, in terms of at least being in one poll, yeah. So if we were to find a win at Cincinnati, it would be, Bubba, I think it would be the biggest upset in East Carolina history based on where we are right now. And where they are, I think it would, looking back, I'd say the upset over TCU, in terms of it being such a shock, would be the biggest surprise upset in ECU history back in 2002. But
yeah,
I think this would surpass it in terms of it just being surprising.
Right, I agree, and it's funny you bring up that with TCU that day. That was actually when I was playing small college football elsewhere, so I was unable to attend that game, but I was certainly following it as it was after our game or before, whichever the case was. And I remember Travis Heath, I think, maybe getting a strip or a scoop and score, taking it back probably at least about 50 or 60 yards, if not more, and the Pirates shocking the Horned Frogs that day.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we have the horses to beat Cincy or SMU, but, you know, I keep looking at that SMU game, and I think they're coming off of they're going to be playing Memphis in primetime this week. We got a 12 o'clock kickoff down in Dallas. I guess technically 11 o'clock their time. Coming off that primetime game against Memphis where they're either going to be riding sky high after a big win or down after an upset. There's just a chance in that SMU game. I think SMU could come out sleepwalking, and if we're motivated, who knows what can happen down in Dallas next weekend. And I believe they have another big game after. Seems like maybe they play Navy after us. Seems like we're sandwiched between Memphis and Navy. So
I think that may be right. I certainly know that here in the next two or three weeks, SMU does have that trip to Annapolis that you're referencing.
Yeah, so you would have to be with it for the next two or three weeks, and that's probably right. So that one is more intriguing to me than this one. This one, man, Cincy is just solid on all three sides of the ball and just plays good physical football. And, you know, I'm really concerned about our offense against Cincinnati's defense.
Yeah, an awful lot is going to have to align in order for us to not only have a chance to win, but be competitive and have any opportunity the next 2 weeks against Cincinnati and SMU. And you look at the line for this game, that's not something we spent a lot of time talking about, but I know it opened at 20.5, and the last I saw, it had moved up to 24. So
Well, that has a lot to do with the way we played last week, and a lot of people. You know, we got some credit last week after that UCF game with that line. You know, it was a close line. It flip-flopped when at one time we were favored against South Florida. So I think Vegas is kind of going the other way now. They're like, yeah, no, we got on the Pirates a little too soon.
Yeah, I was not surprised to see that line go up the way it did. I certainly expected to see a lot of money on the Bearcats. But taking a look at this one, and we'll certainly talk a little bit more in depth about it here in just a few minutes with Chad Brendel from the Bearcats Journal. But like you said, this Cincinnati Ball Club, I think when you look at them, yes, they operate out of different schemes, but just in terms of the physicality and the emphasis on the run game and wanting to be a very well-balanced offense. I know I was looking at their numbers earlier in the week, and they run it more than 60% of the time, but they do have a very capable quarterback, and he's a dual threat in Desmond Ridder. So I think this is what Mike Houston in the next couple years would like to see in the East Carolina program look like.
Yeah, I think so, Bubba. You know, I do think, and I mentioned it with Al later, I think maybe we need to reevaluate what we're doing offensively in the short term and be a little bit more creative on offense and probably go a little more wide open with the passing game going forward in the next year. In year two, we're going to be able to run it better, but I just don't see us having the horses to be able to, you know, what they're running now is what they ran at JMU, and at JMU, they had more talent than most of the other schools they were playing. And we just ain't going to be able to do what Coach Houston wants to do. I don't even think next year consistently to the level to be successful at a high level. But I think long-term, you're right, he wants to look similar to Cincinnati.
And on the defensive side of the ball, some bad news for the Pirates. Aaron Ramsour, who had a very strong game against UCF a couple weeks ago, 14 tackles. He unfortunately is done for the year as he tore his ACL against USF.
Yeah, terrible news for him. He's a senior, right?
I can't recall. I believe Aaron will be back next year. I'm not 100% on that. I think he will be.
But okay, well, hopefully.
I may be mistaken, but
yeah. Either way, it's tough for the young man, and But hopefully he'll have another year in the purple and gold and, you know, be able to bounce back. But it's a tough injury. He'd been playing well. So.
Yeah, and defensively, we until last week, we had been playing pretty well against the run, and certainly not where we wanted to be, but respectable. And then last week, and the Bulls put up nearly 350 on the ground. I mean, going into that game, you probably wouldn't have thought they'd have much more than about 350 total, but nonetheless, their quarterbacks were very successful running the football, all three of them, and they had about 180 of that 347. So it'll be interesting to see against a dual-threat quarterback like Ritter and then a couple of solid backs in Warren and Doakes, how we play against the run this week.
What kind of depth do we have at linebacker? Do you think his injury contributed to our numbers last week?
Yeah. To be honest, I don't recall what stage in the game that Aaron Ramsour went down, but I'm sure it certainly didn't help.
Right, yeah. We got speaking of linebackers, we got a junior college linebacker visiting this weekend per 24/7 Sports. He right now is committed to Texas State. We're trying to flip him to replace the linebacker. You remember the linebacker that decommitted to us from South Carolina a few weeks ago?
Yes, Sean Brown.
Yeah, he ended up committing to Coastal, so he wanted to stay Coastal. We were trying to figure out what the reason he decommitted, and evidently he wanted to stay closer to home and going to go to Coastal. So we lost out to a Sun Belt school of all things, and now we're trying to flip a kid from a Sun Belt school. The kid's at junior college. He's originally from Texas. Right now he's verbal to Texas State. So it'll be interesting to see how that visit goes this weekend and if we can flip him, because we definitely need at least, you know, one middle linebacker commitment. And you get a junior college kid, a kid that he committed to Utah coming out of high school, Bubba. So Kyle Whittingham certainly knows defense.
Yeah, I saw that, and I saw also trying to remember I think he had a brother that was at a BYU.
Yes, correct. Yep.
So, from what I recall, his last name looks like one of those guys you would expect to be playing for BYU in Utah a lot of times, because BYU always has a very challenging roster to pronounce.
Yeah, probably someone from a Samoan heritage or Polynesian heritage. So, but you want to talk a little Bearcat football now?
Yeah, let's go ahead and pitch it to our guest. Caught up with Chad Brindle from Bearcats Journal, UC's 24/7 site, and let's go to that conversation.
Well, Bubba, another big game this week. I know Coach is always talking about it's the biggest game of the year because it's going to be Cincinnati and obviously the next game, and we have a very special guest now.
Yeah, the 17th-ranked Bearcats are coming to Dowdy Ficklin Stadium on Saturday night. And to get the Bearcats' perspective, welcome in from Bearcats Journal, the UC 24/7 site, Chad Brindle.
How's it going, fellas?
We're doing good. How are you?
I can't complain. It's been a fun season so far on the Cincinnati side of things.
Yeah, I was going to ask that very thing. I remember having you on the very first time we had it. You were telling me about one of the things that stood out from the first interview, you were talking about, I was thinking about earlier today, knowing you were coming on, about how good recruiting Luke Fickell was doing. And I guess fast forward now, middle of the 2019 season, things are starting to look good for you guys. And you were not lying when you said the recruiting was great.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at the guys he brought in when he first got the job, I think that was one of the advantages of, you know, being from Ohio State and having his, you know, hands on the pulse of things in Ohio. Mike Warren was one of the first guys he brought in who has become a star. Kobe Bryant, who has become a really, really solid starting cornerback, and Derek Forrest, who's maybe one of the two or three best safeties in the conference, and Jarrell White, who's been an excellent addition at linebacker. And then all the way forward, now you're starting to see more and more guys that from that 2018 class that was number one in the AAC and the number one class in UC history, those guys are starting to flash and make a consistent impact now. So, yeah, that Luke just he had his pulse on Ohio, especially. He relied on that heavily and then picked off some guys from from out of state, but the recruiting's never been better at Cincinnati, and that is absolutely showing up on the field.
Taking a look at this this particular team, or in the program as a whole, rather, but 17 out of 20 now, and Bearcats have won. And after that first season where UC went 4-8, just been a remarkable run. And this year you're 6-1 with a victory over UCF. I guess that's the one that really stands out. So tell us about this particular club. I know a lot's built around the defense and then the running game.
Yeah, and it's a completely different style of defense than we saw a year ago. A year ago, they were absolutely suffocating on first down and third down, and they were one of the best teams in the country at forcing three and outs. That hasn't quite been the case this year. They've been a little bit more bend but don't break, but they also now lead the country in turnovers forced with 19. So especially like if you look at over the past three games, they forced 14 turnovers, including five, I think it was either four or five against UCF, with a couple of those coming down in the red zone. And that's kind of, I think they maybe unlocked a little secret to beating this version of the UCF squad. I don't know if it would have worked against Mackenzie Milton, but they kept them from going over the top. They forced them to methodically work the ball down the field, and then they were able to either force field goals or force turnovers in the red zone. They only scored one turnover in six red zone trips. And that's kind of been how this defense has operated. They're doing a really good job getting after the quarterback with their front four, especially when you consider they lost three all-conference defensive linemen last year, with two of them now in the NFL. Generally, in the American Athletic Conference, if you lose three defensive linemen, you're going to have quite a bit of rebuilding to do. And that was a huge concern coming into this season. What they've done is they've attacked it with numbers. They're rotating eight, nine guys in and out of that defensive line, basically two guys at every spot. And they've used that to continue to pressure the quarterback, continue to be effective stopping the run. And they're in that range where they're right around being a top 25 defense in the sport. And you have to look at Marcus Freeman, who's the defensive coordinator, under 35 years old, played for Luke Fickell at Ohio State. He was a heck of a linebacker at Ohio State. And he's now becoming one of the hot, young assistant coaching prospects in the country with what he's done with his defense the past 2 years.
You mentioned how you guys on defense are more bend but don't break this year, how you give us some yardage but tend to force turnovers in the red zone. Oddly enough, that's how our offense works. We drive the field in the red zone. So. pretty good measure for you guys.
If that's your MO, I think it's – it favors Cincinnati.
What's amazing is we didn't play very well, you know, in the last game with USF, and there was 21 points potentially off the board that we didn't get. All the way, the momentum killer, even the coach talked about, was where they go down a score. We had a 100-yard kickoff return from Tyler Snead. Special teams. The special teams has been the best, I think, that I've seen, and I don't know if the guys would agree with this, in a long, long time. One of the highlights of 2019 has been how great the special teams has been. The block punt we had with UCF, and then we had the kickoff returns. The first time in 94 games we've had a kickoff return for 100 yards for a touchdown. So they score, come down and quickly score 7-7. We're driving down the field, and our true freshman running back coughs up the ball at the 9-yard line. Instead of being 14-7 East Carolina, they take the ball down and score. And I think that was a big thing that really unraveled. The game unraveled after that. And what's tough is when you have a game that you feel like you have a chance to win, and then, oh, by the way, you have now Cincinnati that's next at your doorstep, so to speak. So I know that the games have to be played, but it's a really tough game for East Carolina, even when it's a home game at Dowdy-Picklin.
Yeah, I think you're getting a Cincinnati team that, as funny as it sounds, especially offensively, they still haven't found a great rhythm yet this year. Even on the way to being 6-1 and pretty much being in the driver's seat in the East in the American Athletic Conference right now. What's going to be interesting to me, even though the offense has been inconsistent, the one time it was at its best was coming off the bye week on the road at Marshall, where everybody thought that was going to be a pretty close game. Marshall, one of the better teams in Conference USA, and Cincinnati going on the road, coming off of the UC, or going, it was the game before the UCF game, and everybody thought there might be a chance for a hiccup there, and Cincinnati put up 50-plus. So it'll be interesting to see if Mike Denbrock can go back, the offense coordinator, can go back to that well and get the offense really on track. Because the big thing that is a difference from this year to last year, they were top 10 in the country in third down conversion rate on offense, over 50%. This year they're at about 38%, which is pretty far down the list. And they're just not doing a good job staying in front of the chains right now. Some of that is a younger offensive line. They're not running it as well on first and second down as they did consistently last year. So they're looking more at third and six, third and seven instead of third and three, third and four. And they're struggling to convert that quite a bit more than they did last season. If they can stay ahead of the chains, then this offense can be really deadly. And we'll see, they potentially got a big boost last week when Jared Doakes, who was their leading rusher in 2017, missed all of 2018 with a sports hernia, and then got hurt in the UCLA game. He dinged up his knee. He's still been working back to 100%, and he goes out against Tulsa and scores three touchdowns and really looked like the Jared Doakes that people were expecting to see. Everybody talks about Mike Warren, and as wonderful and fantastic as Mike has been, Jared Doakes was the starter going into 2018 before he got hurt. So that should tell you a little bit about the talent of Jared Doakes. And we'll see now if it's more of a two-headed monster at running back, because Doakes gives them, you know, Mike's, Warren's a, he's a quintessential college back, but he doesn't really have that big breakaway speed. And Doakes has that run, you know, runs in the 4.4s. So that could give them an extra dynamic on offense that they really haven't had yet this year.
Chad, before we dig a little bit deeper into the offensive personnel, I wanted to very quickly go back to the defense. You're talking about how it's been a team effort with the defensive line. And I know that unit, the defensive front, and they generated 19 sacks to go along with those 19 turnovers. And Michael Pitts leads the team with 4.5 sacks and 7.5 TFLs. So talk a little bit about him and some of the others to keep an eye on. And then I know on the back end that Javon Hicks has – a team leading 4 interceptions.
So Michael Pitts is the veteran of that group. And as I said, with the other three guys that started with him last year graduated. So it was going to be imperative that he really step up. He plays what they call the jack. It's basically a hybrid. Sometimes he's a rush end. Sometimes he's a stand up outside linebacker. They move him around a lot. They get him in a lot of different looks that give offenses problems. He started really hot, and this defense, I think, needed that from him early. As we've gotten along into the season, teams have now focused on him a little bit more and made it a little bit more difficult for him to get home. But what that's done is opened up the opposite side for sophomore in Myjai Sanders, who is having just a phenomenal past two or three games in terms of getting pressure on the quarterback and being effective in the run game. He's a kid, and I talked about this when I did a UCLA podcast prior to the opening game with UCLA, and the UCLA fans didn't believe me and actually mocked me, which I thought was hilarious. The kid showed up at 6'5", 205 pounds, and in 2.5 months, he was 258. So he put on over 50 pounds in 2.5 months. Well, it wasn't even the room. I think a lot of that was just nutrition and learning to eat right. And I think at camp, he was one of those guys where, you know, he would get his tray of food and go sit down, and then he would try to leave, and they would be like, no, you need to have another one. And then he would sit down and try to leave, and they would be like, no, you still have one more to go.
I don't know, maybe he was spending some extra time with Skyline or anything.
No, well, he had the frame, he had the body of a kid that could really carry weight, but he just had never really been in a weight room, never really been in a conditioning program to put it on. And it was like each time we would come to practice every week and you would look at him, you would be like, what are you guys doing to him? are you just like putting a feeding tube in him and just filling him up while he sleeps at night, or what is going on? But he's really, I mean, he's had the Pro Football Focus guys grade the edge rushers and their performances, and he's had one of the top 10 games in the country this year as he graded out on the edge, and that was, I think, 2 weeks ago against Houston. So he's really starting to come on, and then on the interior, Marcus Brown and Jabari Taylor and Elijah Ponder are three guys that have really stepped up and helped, you know, ease the loss of Cortez Broughton and Marquise Copeland, who are both in the NFL now, and made that less, because that was the biggest concern. Like I said, when you're dealing at this level, this isn't Alabama where you lose two defensive tackles that have played for 4 years and you just plug two new guys in. You usually have a big concern about what you're going to be able to do there. And they've been able to plug a four-man rotation in there along with Curtis Brooks that has really, really held the line of scrimmage and given them not only just the ability to stop the run, but also pressure in the passing game. And the past 2 weeks, it's been a kid, Marcus Brown, that has really flashed and started to look like a guy that can be a difference maker on defense for them.
You've had good play from your quarterback. Completed 60% of his passes, 1,400 yards, 14 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, rushed for over 200. Talk about him.
Desmond Ridder is he's about similar to where he was last year at this point. I think UC fans were expecting a huge jump. I think he's been about the same. Some of that is last year they started an offensive line that went fifth-year senior, six-year senior, 29-year-old hockey player, and a fifth-year junior. And three of those guys graduated, and now you're working in some of the guys Luke Fickell has brought into the program over the past 3 years, which leaves you with a lot of youth and inexperience. So the line hasn't been as steady. He took a hit from Chase Young in the Ohio State game that I think made him maybe a little gun-shy for a week or two. Chase Young is prone to doing that to people, as I think he's the best player in college football. So he looked a little gun-shy in terms of running the read option for a couple weeks. We're starting to see him get his comfort zone back there, where he's pulling it a little bit more, and he's making some plays, with his legs. The big thing for Ridder, I think, this year is he's developed a number one threat outside in sophomore wide receiver Alec Pierce. You guys might be familiar with his brother, who transferred to North Carolina to play basketball as a grad transfer this offseason, Justin Pierce. Alec has really given Desmond Ridder a deep threat, and somebody that at 6'3", 6'3 and a half, runs a legit sub 4.5 40 and a 40-inch vertical leap, and a guy that really high points the football well on the deep ball, and he's made some really nice contested catches this year. That's made some of the underneath stuff to tight end Josiah DeGuara and slot receiver Rashad Medeiros a little bit more accessible than it's been in the past. I would say if there's been one kind of concern for the offense, they haven't really been able to find a second outside wide receiver that's been playing with any consistency. I think they really, going down the stretch of the season, if they're going to reach their potential, they've got to be able to find somebody for Dez on that other side, so he's not working just one side of the field. So you can't look at Pierce and say, we're shading the safety over this way because he's not throwing the other way. But other than that, I mean, Dez has had a really solid year. Like you said, his completion percentage is good. His touchdown to interception ratio is very strong. And the good news for Cincinnati, he's only a redshirt sophomore. They've still got a couple more years of growth in the Desmond Ridder era.
Chad, I was going to say, we're dropping this podcast on Thursday for Halloween for our preview. Do you have any great Halloween memories, a costume, or do you have any Halloween candy, maybe a favorite Halloween character that comes to mind?
Now, I'm not a huge Halloween guy. I am. What I'll do is the local grocery store, I have that one day a year where they cut all the Halloween candy and cost leading up to Halloween.
Yeah.
And I've got a 9-year-old, so I'm out with my 9-year-old on Halloween walking her around. So I'm not at the house to give out candy. So I just buy some for myself.
Yeah.
And that's the ultimate parent move, right? Like, that's what you're supposed to do.
Right. Hey, before the podcast, I want to ask you one more thing, sort of Halloween related. We talked about it a little before the podcast. You guys used to, on third down there at home at Nippert Stadium, you had to play the Halloween music from the Halloween series, Michael Myers, on third down. And you guys got away from that now and actually switched to another horror movie, the sound from The Purge.
Yeah, so I can't remember how it was many, many years ago. They played on, I think it was a Thursday night ESPN game against USF, I believe, and they did the Halloween music on third down, and it stuck. And it just, they continued it. It lasted for probably a decade, if not more. And then last year, the seniors voted. They wanted to use some audio from the movie The Purge, and it's the audio that kind of signals the start of The Purge. As I was telling you before the show, it's really not, I mean, it's not that bad of a jingle to use, but at fall camp, they have these like 24 inch speakers, and every time it's third down throughout the entire practice, they play that on like 37. And it just blasts your eardrums out. And they do it over and like on the, you know, those days at camp where they work third down over and over and over again. And every August now, I'm at home in my bed sleeping in the middle of the night, and I wake up to The Purge music just blasting through my head.
Well, lock all your doors.
Yeah, he wakes up and he's got a sweat.
Cold sweat. Yeah. Oh, it's awful.
Yeah.
So, Chad, I have a couple questions very quickly before we wrap this up.
Very quickly.
Gotcha.
That's what she said.
I wanted to ask you about the Bearcats special teams. Like Dave alluded to earlier, the Pirates special teams have been pretty solid. I noticed in the kicking game, your kicker is 3 for 7 from 30 to 39 yards, and there have been 3 blocks. So talk a little bit about that, and then also the rest of your special teams.
The kicking game has been the one area that leaves a little bit still to be desired. Sam Crosa, he would be like 6 of 7, but he's had 3 of those blocks. The problem is it's been a little twofold. On 2 of them, someone just got beat at the line of scrimmage and a guy got in and got his hand up. But Crosa also, he tends to kick a lower ball. And I think the scouting report is out on that now, and teams are figuring out if you can break through that line and get your hand up even a little bit, you've got a chance to swat it down. They used Cole Smith for a long one against Tulsa that he hit from 51 yards. He's kind of been the guy. Anything over 45, 50 yards, Cole Smith is going to be the guy. Crosa has been more accurate from shorter distance, but he needs to not continue getting it blocked. That would be a suggestion for me. Having half your kicks blocked is usually a pretty bad sign. That's not good. Other than that, on special teams, it's been excellent. They have a All-American level punter in James Smith. He was a second team All-American last year. He had a little bit of a slow start. And by saying that, he was freshman James Smith, who was first team All-American conference punter. And then the past 4 games, he's been second team All-American James Smith, that flips field position and averages, you know, right around 50 yards a kick with great hang time and no returns. He's been fantastic. And then they've kind of struck gold with 2 freshmen. One being Trey Tucker, who's returning kickoffs. He hasn't broken one to the house yet, but he's one of those guys that he's going to get one soon. You can see it coming. He's had quite a few 25, 30, 40 yard returns where he's been, you know, a shoestring tackle away from taking it to the house. And then they've gotten a lot of production as a punt returner from freshman Ryan Montgomery, who's a running back and has given them a little bit more action in the return game on the punt side. And then they've been very good covering punts and kickoffs. I think there's really only been one plus 40-yard kickoff return this year, and there's really nobody's been able to do anything on punt return against them. So outside of the kicker being 3 for 7, it's been a very strong special teams unit, but as you get towards the end of the season, you don't want to come down to a point where you're Tulsa last week, and or you're Tulsa against SMU, and you've got to rely on a kicker to win you a game. Having a rolling guy out there that's 3-for-7 doesn't make you feel great about it.
Yeah, I noticed your kickoff specialist hit Ryan Jones had eight touchbacks, in 39 kickoffs. So I was wondering if that was more by design or just his leg or what.
Some of it's by design. I think there definitely have been some spots where they're looking to kind of angle it and kick it high, have it land at about the 2-3 yard line, and then let their coverage team come down and make a play. The thought process on that is I think teams are averaging right at 18 yards a return. So if you kick it to the 2 and they only get 18 yards, they're starting at the 20 instead of the 25. So that's been some by design. I think there's probably a couple times where they'd like for him to have had a longer leg consistently. But you know, they've been able to use it, whether by design or the times that they've wanted him to kick it into the end zone and he hasn't. Their coverage team has been able to make it a positive by, you know, holding teams still inside the 25 when they haven't put the ball in the end zone.
Chad, I want to ask you, before we let you go, I'd give you a chance to promote your website about recruiting and obviously all the latest on the Bearcats. Can you do that before we go?
Yeah, absolutely. Bearcatjournal.com. I know the 24/7 Sports Network is a big one in the ECU market. So check it out. We've got a ton of recruiting coverage, football, basketball, team content on both sides. 24/7 just started a promo. If you're a member now, you get free CBS All Access, which is $100 value every year included in your subscription. So a lot of good stuff going on. We've got a podcast that we'll be recording tonight that'll drop later tomorrow night into tomorrow. And lots of good stuff. We got basketball scrimmage that they scheduled for Halloween night, which is just great for parents.
Yes, it is. Well, Chad,
a 6 o'clock tip off on Halloween night.
Who does that, right?
For a scrimmage against a Division III team, an exhibition against a Division III team. Who goes to it? I have to go to it.
Wow, and you have a 9-year-old. I remember you saying, wow.
Well, it's going to be cold and raining tomorrow, so I don't mind having the wife handle that one. I'm not going to lie.
All right. Well, definitely trick or treat, right? Thank you so much.
Exactly.
Happy Halloween to you. And we'll talk to you very soon when basketball season rolls around here in just a couple weeks.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, Chad. Always good hearing from you, talking Bearcat football. Very entertaining guy. Likes to talk. He's not ever at a loss for words when you interview him, which is good because you can just throw something out to him and he runs with it.
Yeah, Chad does an excellent job, and he was definitely a great interview, and look forward to having him back on when basketball season rolls around. But one of the things I found very interesting that Chad said was the special teams struggles that Cincinnati's had at times, especially on the kicking side of things. They've had 3 field goals blocked. It's kind of a combination of the protection and also low trajectory on the kicks. So that's something to keep an eye on. Let's hope we can play some good red zone defense because it's certainly going to have to be the bend but don't break philosophy. Or this weekend, hopefully we can force the Bearcats to kick some field goals. And if we do, maybe that will be one of those many things that I was referencing earlier that we'll need to align. And then also, they don't put many kickoffs into the end zone. So maybe Tyler Snead will not have too many opportunities, but when we do return kickoffs, maybe we can make something happen there as well.
Yeah, we're going to need to block kicks, block punts, return kickoffs, and take the quarterback out, all kinds of things. If we're going,
yeah, a lot's gonna have to happen. But that's what hopefully Holton and
play the games.
Yeah, hopefully Holton and the skill guys will take better care of the football this week and take advantage of red zone opportunities because, like Chad said, this defense they bring blitzes from all over the place. They force a lot of turnovers, a lot of negative yardage plays, 19 sacks and then a lot of TFLs and then also 19 turnovers. So that's something the Pirates are going to have to certainly win the turnover battle to win this, or pull off this monstrous upset on Saturday.
Run some option against them. I know we've done a little bit of that, a little bit of speed option with Holton, but you think we got much more of that in the playbook?
It'll be interesting to see. Kind of like Rennie and Golia said, I don't know how Cincinnati's team speed stacks up with USF as far as, the way they were doing a pretty good job of stringing those plays out. And when we ran it last week and wasn't very successful. So it'll be interesting to see if we do that or if we take more of a right at them approach. You may have heard what Donnie Kirkpatrick said in Wednesday's post-practice press conference. He was just talking about how it was frustrating last week on the first play of the game. We had an RPO called and trying to get the ball in Josiah Hatfield's hands in a variety of ways. He's such a playmaker. And Holton made the incorrect read and handed the ball off to Demetrius Mooney. And we had something, we had some leverage there, had the blockers set up if we'd have hit Josiah Hatfield, who was in the orbit motion coming around. Because the corner was chasing him across the formation, but it looked like he had a couple steps on him. But that's something else to keep an eye on, how much we get the ball in Josiah's hands. He said that, and Donnie Kirkpatrick, that is, that Josiah has done a tremendous job in practice, so we have to find a way to get the ball in Josiah Hatfield's hands.
Yeah, he's fast. I'd like to see the ball in his hands more and the C.J. Johnson's hands more. But we got to get the ball to our playmakers more. I don't understand, and I'm trying not to be too critical of the offense, because I know it's year one, but I really don't understand what we're trying to do on offense. I mean, besides be physical and run the ball. There's just some times that I don't know what we're doing. We seem to have – there's no continuity. Get the ball in this guy's hand, get the ball in that guy's hand, let him make a damn play. I would use these next 2 weeks really almost as scrimmages to try to figure out what will work against Connecticut and Tulsa to try to pick up those last two is really how I'd look at these two games. I mean, I hate to say that, but just being real.
And kind of like along the lines of what you were saying, I would love to see the breakdown as far as like some of the play calls and as far as run, pass, and the different downs and distances, because I'm sure it may not be as extreme as what I'm thinking and what it seems like it is, but it seems like the number of first down runs it's probably like 75 or 80%. I said, it may not be that bad, but it seems it is.
I made that comment several weeks ago that we need to break tendency. If you remember, I said it was after the ODU win. I said we need to break tendency and start throwing it more on first and second down. You know, what we're doing is we're getting in situations where we're throwing it when the defense wants us to. We're throwing it when we have to rather than instead of when we want to. Well, we're ending up in third and six, third and sevens, and we're having to throw rather than throwing on first down. And I don't know. I don't get it. Donnie's not from that school. I mean, Donnie, coached under Lincoln Riley. I mean, I really don't understand it, and I understand Coach Houston wants to be physical, and believe me, I love Coach Houston. I think he's going to get it done here long term, but I think in the short term we need to change our philosophy just a little bit.
I thought the comparison that you made to 2005, I thought that was a good comparison as far as Coach Holtz and what he wanted to do, but that year we didn't necessarily have the personnel to do it, so we opened it up a little bit more and let James Pinckney throw it around to Bobby Good and Kevin Roach and some of those guys.
Andre Allison, yeah.
Andre Allison, obviously, the main target.
Yeah. So, no, it was just exactly right. And that's what I think would have been smarter this year. I my one thing about Coach Houston, why he's been successful, he's never coached at this level. So I don't know maybe if he overestimated our talent. I think he sees it now, and I really think he'll correct. I really believe he will. I think you'll see a different approach next year, not completely, but just a little bit. I think maybe it's a little too late now in the season, but who knows? We still got five games left, so and an off weekend there, so you can open it up a little more. But Skip had the very similar philosophy of what he wanted to do in year one. Like I said, we were way more wide open on offense because we just didn't have the bodies to do what he wanted to do and be physical, and it came later. But why don't we go to a guy now that's been around for a long time and, was here for Skip Holtz and Steve Logan, and now he's still around. And he was here for Pat Dye, and now he's still around for Mike Houston, and that's Al Myatt from Bonesville.net, and we'll go to him right now.
Well, Kyle, very excited to have our next guest. I met our next guest many years ago briefly, and he's been covering the Pirates for many years, back in the day with the News and Observer, and, of course, with now with Bonesville.net, and also he's the editor of Dunn Area Sports. Al Myatt, how are you, man?
Doing good, David. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. So happy to have you on. You're one of my favorite journalists, and I appreciate you've always been, for many, many years, you've always been very kind, very fair to the Pirates, and we wanted to have you on to talk about the program and maybe the state of the program, how far you go back with the Pirates. It's many years, I know.
Well, when I first started working professionally was with the Washington Daily News in Washington, North Carolina, and I covered the Pirates some then when Pat Dye was coaching at East Carolina, and certainly that was a great era. They ran an option offense. It was very exciting, and they were very successful and covered all eras to an extent, but since 1997, with more consistency covering them on a regular basis. So it does span a good period of time.
It does. I want to get your take on things. The program, as we've been doing the podcast about a year and a half now, and Kyle's been with me every step of the way, so has Bubba. It's been such a tough thing when you love a program as much as we do. I'm in love with the program, of the university, football. We have such a pride, a tradition when it comes to the football program. What's your take on things? Where do you see us now as someone that's been covering the Pirates for a very long time?
Well, it's a week-to-week thing, David, to an extent. And certainly I think a lot of people were encouraged by the second half at South Florida. I mean, not South Florida, but Central Florida. A good second half against the Knights, and that's a program with carries kind of some national weight, and limited them, I believe, to one touchdown in the second half, and at 16 unanswered points. That created some expectations, I think, going into homecoming last week with South Florida. And South Florida played well. That was certainly a part of last week's outcome. And East Carolina maybe not living up to the expectations created the previous week with the second half at UCF. So right now it seems like things are a little bit more down than usual for this season. I think that Mike Houston has generated some optimism about getting the program turned around. And, very demanding opponent this week, Cincinnati nationally ranked, and then a trip to SMU. The Mustangs are also nationally ranked. So some big challenges in store in the coming weeks. But I think, generally speaking, I think people are optimistic. They like how Mike Houston conducts business. And feel optimistic about what he's going to do with the program.
Yeah, I think a lot of that South Florida game, Al, looking back at it, I think South Florida is way more talented than their record indicates. And now they're 4-4 now, and they had a nice win over BYU. But I had watched them play, only put up 3 points against Navy. you know, looking at how athletic they are, for the life of me, I don't know how they only put up 3 points against Navy, and I believe only 9 against Georgia Tech. They got talent. I think maybe had some chemistry issues maybe between the coaching staff and the players. I don't know. But they're a talented football team, and I think our guys aren't used to expectations. You know, we've been terrible the last 3 or 4 years, and there was suddenly expectations on them to win that football game. And I think when things started going south, they kind of folded.
Yep. Well, they got off to a great start, obviously, with the kick return. And, you know, the defense goes out there. I was talking with Coach Houston. There was a missed assignment on the first defensive snap. And what could have been a sack turned into a first down for South Florida. And, you know, you want the spark of the opening kickoff to kind of translate to other phases of the game. The defense wasn't able to step up in that situation. And South Florida, you know, the personnel is good, and they had things together on Saturday. Maybe they were looking at East Carolina as a winnable game, much in the sense that the Pirates were looking at the Bulls in that manner.
Absolutely. They needed that game to get to 4-4 to have any kind of shot to get to a bowl game. And I'll tell you another key spot early in that game. We were driving on them our first quarter. It was 7-7, and we fumble, you know, I think down around the 20-yard line. And they come back down the field, drive, and score. And instead of us being up 10-7 or 14-7, they're up 14-7.
Right. And then after that, chance to get, you know, back in the ball game and an interception in the red zone. So
yeah.
Turnovers were a big factor. Had the opportunity at the 1 yard line and didn't get in the second half. And so all of those things add up to a pretty big deficit in that ball game.
Yeah, I talk about that from the 1 yard line. I don't know about you, but I just wonder, you got a 220-pound quarterback or whatever Holton weighs. I just wonder why you just don't get under center and fall forward.
Yep. I don't think we were really beating them at the line of scrimmage, and I think that probably went into the evaluation there. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right, Al. I think that was the biggest thing that I was going to ask you, that very question of being that you followed the Pirates a long time. I know there was different eras, and there's different trends as far as the way a receiver looks or whatever, but we were talking about this. I couldn't believe how big the offensive defensive line of Cincinnati was compared to East Carolina. It wasn't even close.
I mean, Cincinnati or South Florida?
I'm sorry?
You said Cincinnati.
I beg your pardon. I meant to say USF. I'm sorry.
Well, the thing about it is Cincinnati is big too, so it's
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, we were just talking about Cincinnati. Yeah, so yeah.
But we're going to see another big defensive front coming to Greenville this weekend. So. They are big and athletic, and you almost say, well, they played so well that game. You know, what have they been doing the rest of the season? Like Kyle said, don't know how they didn't manage to put more than 3 points on the board at Navy. But you get up there at Navy, and they've got that option offense and something about that atmosphere that Navy plays very well. Sometimes the opponents don't play well. But, you know, every week is different, and nothing points that out better, perhaps, than the competitive team we saw in the second half in Orlando, as opposed to the struggles that East Carolina had at homecoming last week. You know, Cincinnati, they've had one bad game this year. That was at Ohio State, but Ohio State has beaten a lot of people bad. I think Cincinnati has a win over UCLA. Very impressive that they were able to beat UCF, which ended their regular season winning streak at multiple seasons. And they're going to be a load, no doubt. It's about, you know, the challenge that Cincinnati provides this week, another big defensive front, nationally ranked team. They played one bad game, or they were outscored and shut out, I guess, Ohio State. But Ohio State has beaten a lot of people bad this year. And they beat UCLA. They had to win over UCF. And just a very strong football team coming to Greenville.
Yeah, no, they're really good. Like you said, the win over UCF, beat UCLA. Another impressive win to me, not so much the opponent, but just how they beat them. They played Marshall and Huntington, and Marshall's got a good football team, but it certainly a game Cincinnati should win. But Cincinnati just went up there and dominated Marshall, beat them something like 52-14, something along those lines. And, you know, it's kind of scary to think that. I think if you put Marshall and East Carolina on the field together this year, Marshall would win the football game. So hopefully we don't get beat quite that bad. We need a good showing this week to kind of get some hope back.
I think that's true, Kyle, because I don't know if it's reasonable to even hope that East Carolina can win this game, but what you want to see when a program is rebuilding is progress. And I know that Coach Houston and his staff are not into moral victories. You know, they're game planning to beat the Bearcats. But at the same time, I think realistically, we just want to see a competitive showing and do some things better this week than last week.
Yeah, well, Al, I don't know what you think, but I had talked to someone about Terry Gallagher. He played wide receiver for us during the Pat Dye era. I was talking to him. He tended to agree with me. He coached high school ball for a while down in Georgia. I would use these next 2 weeks. You know, I wouldn't tell the players this, but I would use these next 2 weeks against Cincinnati and SMU almost as scrimmages going into the off week to see what we can do to put together to try to win the last two against Connecticut and Tulsa to create some positive momentum going into the offseason.
Well, that's, you know, kind of a logical approach. You might play more players like you're talking about and try to develop some depth and find out who can do what you can do well going into these last two games. Certainly going to be an opportunity to finish the season with some upward momentum. With three wins now, you've got to have an upset to even possibly get in with six wins, and East Carolina's played two SDS teams this year. So the automatic qualifier in that situation is seven wins, but, you know, with East Carolina's fan base, if there are not enough six-win qualifiers that haven't played two SDS teams in East Carolina, I could possibly get a bowl berth.
Yeah, and quite frankly, if we get to 5-7, I'll be excited. Al, we're joined now by the third member of our broadcast team, Bubba. Welcome in to the interview.
I appreciate it, guys. Al, one of the things I wanted to ask you is you've covered football in this state and East Carolina football for a long time. With that being the case, you've covered Steve Logan's teams, Skip Holtz, Ruffin McNeil, et cetera. So do you see any similarities like between when maybe Skip Holtz took over for John Thompson as to what you see now with Mike Houston?
I do. And, you know, Skip pretty much had his style of play, and he knew what he wanted to do in terms of turning the program around. And I see a lot of that in Mike Houston. You know, he's not going to change from what he believes works and what has been proven to him works in previous coaching positions. And I think Skip had a lot of that same, some of those same qualities in him, and it paid off. The only difference is Skip Holtz was competing in Conference USA, and
great.
Houston is competing in the American. So I can tell you from seeing teams week to week, there's a big jump there.
Al, I was going to mention, too, when you brought that up about the very point about Houston, it's interesting to see that, to me, I really don't care about style points, meaning if we score 500 points or, you know, obviously you want to see points scored, don't get me wrong, enough to win the game, obviously, too. But for me, as long as we win the game, if we win 12 games and they're boring games and we went undefeated, hey, man, I'll take it, won't you?
Well, Tulane had a season like that one time. And,
yeah, 97, wasn't it? 98.
Right. And the, you know, big knock was they have not played anybody. And so they really didn't get, an opportunity to get in a major bowl at that time. You know, winning is great. And I think everybody went home after Gardner Webb and William and Mary, and the bus ride home probably from Old Dominion was great. But you want to be building the program and certainly competing in the conference that you're a member in is an element in building the program. So I know what you're saying. A win certainly beats a loss, and hopefully we're going to see more wins as, you know, Mike Houston continues to develop the program.
Yeah, Bubba, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. That's what I lost you guys for a moment. What did the question that I had, kind of shifting gears to basketball, big overhaul, build, as Coach Dooley said, not a rebuild, most definitely a build. And with 11 new scholarship players coming in, what's your take on what Joe Dooley and staff are attempting to do?
Well, you know, good players make good coaches, and those guys are tireless recruiters. I talked with Joe Dooley one time after last season, and he apologized for calling me late because he was in a different time zone than what he realized, and he was an hour behind. But he's just been all over the place, and they've got very promising talent coming into the program. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that plays out in terms of improvement. And there again, we're in a very tough conference, not only for football, but for basketball. But Joe Dooley is a worker, and he's going to get everything out of his staff and program that's possible, I think.
Yes, Ty Seymour made the comment to us. He's been around here 21 years. This is by far the most talented basketball team we will have put on the court in 21 years he's been around here.
Well, you know, you look at the recruit that Duke and Memphis and some others wanted, and if you're getting those guys, you know, that is a very good sign, I think.
Yeah.
Charles Coleman. With Charles Coleman, and, yeah, Coleman, I really, you know, with him, I mean, he commits to Wake Forest and Danny Manning, then he decommits, and all of a sudden Duke and Pitt, and like you said, Memphis, all the teams are coming after him, and I think it's the fact that you've got a guy now. One thing that Dooley can sell is the fact that if you're a good player and you're playing in a great league like the American, if you're a great player, you're going to get minutes now. You're not going to be at Duke or some of the big programs and be sitting on the bench and maybe be option B or C behind a couple guys. You're actually going to be option A, and you're going to get a ton of minutes.
That's right. And, you know, that's what John Thompson went out and told people, you know, hey, we need players now. And, of course, he was gone in a couple of years, but Skip Holtz came in, and those players, some of them, helped turn the program around.
They sure did. One of them in particular, guys, Chris Johnson. I mean, he's one of the best ever to be at East Carolina, and look at his great NFL career recently in the last couple of years, retired. And he's one of the quickest running backs I've ever seen. Once he gets around the edge, once he gets around that line, he was gone.
No, absolutely. Hey, Al, you've been around a while, seen a lot of good receivers come through East Carolina. We just don't have the talent overall at receiver that we normally do, man. But C.J. Johnson, as a freshman, reminds me of a baby Dwayne Harris.
Well, I think he's a little taller than Dwayne.
Effort he gives.
Yeah. He's definitely what they've needed in terms of, a go-to receiver like Justin Hardy was and Zay Jones was. And he's got the ability to stretch the field and open up some things underneath. And I really like what I see in CJ as well.
What I've been impressed with him, Al, and guys, is the fact that the yards after the catch, he's very good. He has really good hands. He has really good, I guess, field vision, if that's the term. But he has really good, he has a good awareness of where he is on the field and all that sort of thing. And he not only can he make great catches, but the yards after the catch is what I've been. I knew he was a good receiver, but the yards after the catch, I think, is what I've been most surprised early on in his career at East Carolina.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, Dave. His effort. He'll have a guy trying to tackle him, and there was times against South Florida, you know. In my opinion, we got to find a way to get the ball in his hands more. He tries to make plays when he gets the ball in his hand, and he so far hadn't put it on the ground. So when you've got that mindset of trying to make a play, but you're not turning it over, you got to get the ball in your hand.
I was watching CJ a little bit at Central Florida, and he made a catch, and the corner was talking to him. He was talking to the corner, and he wasn't backing down, and he went over the middle. It was either the next play or the play after the next play. He made a catch, and so he's not going to be backing down from anybody. Shows me he's a tough kid. This was on the UCF sideline, and he was not giving any ground. And like I say, they need that kind of receiver. Holton needs to have that kind of receiver among his targets. And we've got some big tight ends. We've got good intermediate receivers in Blake Prohl and Tyler Snead. And we've really got a good receiving core. And I know we're a run-first type of offense, but maybe that passing game can open up some things for the running game as well.
Yeah. You mentioned something earlier and talked about Skip and how Skip came in, knew what he wanted to do, kind of like Coach Houston. But one thing, if you remember, back in 05, Skip did that he didn't do much after the 05 season. We were a little bit more wide open on offense. We went 4 and 5 wide constantly because we couldn't run it. And he tweaked that and went to a more conservative offense later on. And sometimes I wonder if Coach Houston maybe should do that going into next season, just open things up just a little bit more until he gets more of the talent we need to do what he wants to do in here.
Well, it's kind of like Kyle was saying, you know, how do you approach these upcoming games when you're a decided underdog, and what do you want to kind of take out of these games? And, you know, I think Skip kind of had the temporary solution with the passing game, and maybe we'll see some adjustments this week in terms of playing, you know, what's perceived to be a superior opponent. And I wanted to say, when Kyle mentioned Terry Gallagher a little while ago, I still remember Terry Gallagher. One thing that East Carolina could do when people adjusted the defense to play the triple option is he could get downfield and be wide open. And I think he had 3 catches for over 200 yards in an Appalachian State game when he was playing. That was the record for receiving yards in a game for a long time at East Carolina.
Well, Terry will be glad to hear you say that, Al. He won't know what he's done. Good God. Blow him up a little bit. He'll be all over him. So.
Yeah.
He'll be here this weekend, by the way. So we will.
Yeah, he's going to be here for this weekend, and certainly we love having Terry on. He's been a real delight, a lot of fun.
Yes, sir.
Al, I had a kind of a reflective question for you, and you seem, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of East Carolina football, been in a lot of press boxes, interacted with a lot of coaches. Do you have a good story or two that you can share with us? I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but.
Well, I'll tell a story about Pat Dye. That and I hope Woody Peel will forgive me for telling this, but they used to have the weekly press conference at the Beef Barn in Greenville. And I'm not sure if it's still there or not, but
it's not, unfortunately. It's a catering. They do events there, like a catering business, but not like the full scale restaurant with Bob Simon and company.
Way back when William and Mary and East Carolina were both in the Southern Conference, Woody asked Coach Dye a question. He said, Coach, he said, we always have a tough time with William and Mary, and they seem to play better than we do relative to our abilities and that type of thing. And, you know, what are we going to do this week? And Pat Dye looked at Woody. He said, Woody, I never seen you out there, no helmet or shoulder pads. What's all this wee stuff you're talking about? So Pat Dye had the ability to kind of intimidate the media. And I know Lee Moore and Pat bumped heads a few times. And Lee used to be with the Newbern Television. And but anyway, that's a story that I will share with about the former coach.
And what about Coach Logan? I know that that's when I first met you was in 97.
Well, he was Logan,
no stranger.
Coach Logan, one thing I remember about him is he took an interest in his players. I mean, Richard Alston got in some trouble one time. He passed a counterfeit bill at a Burger King drive-thru, I think, and Coach Logan took him and said, son, he said, I told you when you got here, you know, you needed to get involved with the campus ministry, and you've neglected your soul, and kind of counseled him and played him a series or two when he wasn't the starting quarterback to give him some experience. And he ended up playing defensive back for the Cleveland Browns for a little while. But one thing I remember about Coach Logan is he bought a batting cage for his kids. Vince and Nick were baseball players. And, you know, Logan always watches money, even though his coaches make pretty good money.
Yeah.
But he said every time he drove in his driveway and saw the batting cage and saw his sons out there in the batting cage, he said, you know, that was $1,500 that I spent that was good, well spent, because those boys, he just said, you know, there's a lot of other things they could be doing, but out there working on their swings for baseball is a good thing. So Coach Logan was a family man. A lot of people didn't appreciate that about him, maybe, but he treated his players like family as well, and he had a genuine human concern for them.
No question about it. Al, wanted to give you a chance to plug you before we go. I know that you're a busy man, and thanks for giving us some time today with everything you're doing. I know you're on Bonesville.net, right? And also, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about Dunn Area Sports, too.
Dunn Area Sports, we cover teams in the Dunn area, primarily Triton, Midway, Harnett Central, and South Johnston. We cover Campbell Athletics to a degree, and we have fun doing it. And people can check it out at DunnAreaSports.com. And Kate Fear Christian
right, Al,
as well, David.
Yeah, Al, thank you so much for coming on. And certainly we love reading your stuff. And you've been very generous with your time. And look forward to having you back on again soon.
Well, I've enjoyed it immensely, David. So you feel free to give me a call.
Thank you, Al. It was a lot of fun talking to him and just hearing about all the coaches he's seen since he's been here, and a guy that, you know, has seen it all here at East Carolina and still loves it and knows what's going on.
Yeah, I enjoyed that story that he shared about Pat Dye, and then he also had some good thoughts on Steve Logan and the commitment that he had to all the young men that he coached. But something else I wanted to bring up before we make our predictions and wrap the podcast up. This weekend, big weekend for East Carolina baseball. You have the Purple Gold World Series going on as East Carolina baseball wraps up fall practice on Friday. Game one of the Purple Gold World Series is at 3:50 on Saturday, a 1:10 first pitch, and then on Sunday at 12:20. So if you're around and enjoy Pirate baseball, then definitely go out and check that out and get a look at how things are shaping up for the 2020 season. And also on Sunday, and they'll have the Meet the Pirates fall event at 11 a.m. The gates will open, and then they'll have inflatables and those sorts of things. At 12:25, there'll be a facility tour, so you'll get a check out the underneath area of Clark LeClair Stadium as far as the locker room, and I'm sure the indoor hitting facility and all those sorts of things. So that will be fun if you've never seen that. And then at 2:15, if you have young children, they'll be able to run the bases. And then at 2:30, there'll be an autograph session with the team and the coaches. So so definitely check that out. And then things will end for that approximately 3:15.
Yeah, we tip it off. That was baseball you're talking about. We tip it off, was it Wednesday against VMI?
We'll be tipping it off Tuesday night at 7 p.m., and then the women tip it off Wednesday at 11. They'll have Education Day, so Williams Arena, Menchie's Coliseum will be crazy on Wednesday morning, as they'll have probably about 6,000 kids or more from the Pitt County or surrounding areas just screaming their heads off for about two hours straight.
Who do the girls play?
The women play Middle Tennessee.
All right, so the USA American action there, and then and is the VMI game, is that ESPN3, Bubba?
Yes, it's on ESPN3. So sometime next week or in the next week or two, we'll catch up with our buddy Nate Ross. I'm sure he'll probably be on the call for that game. I don't know for sure, but he's typically our ESPN 3 color analyst, so we'll get Nate's thoughts on the first game of the 2019-2020 season for East Carolina basketball.
Nate the Bowtie Ross, good friends yep. with our good friends with our colleague Brendan Shapiro. Nate is.
He is, as far as some of our upcoming content, next Tuesday, like you said, the Pirates will be playing VMI. So either on Monday or Tuesday morning, we'll put out our podcast previewing that game, and we'll catch up with the fifth-year head coach of the Keydets, Dan Earle. So we'll get an excellent perspective. Who better to talk to? And then for the East Carolina perspective, we'll catch up with Steve Rocafort. Obviously, Coach Rock does an excellent job of recruiting, and that's what when you hear him in an interview, it's very easy to see why he's so good as a recruiter, because he has a tremendous personality and just is he's very entertaining to listen to. It's easy to see how recruits would like Coach Rock. And then also co-hosting that podcast with us will be Neil Punt, who played for the Pirates back in the late 90s under Coach Dooley. So a big show planned for the first basketball game of the season. And then also next week we'll have an SMU preview. We'll catch up probably with Billy Embody from SMU's 24/7 site. And then also we'll have Pete Medhurst, Navy's play-by-play announcer, on to preview East Carolina men's basketball's game next Friday night in the Veterans Classic. And then also we'll talk a little football with Pete, and the middies are certainly right there in the running to win the West.
Yeah, great bounce back year from Ken Miamatalolo there at Annapolis. He tell you what, I figured he won't have two bad seasons in a row, and he hadn't. They're right there in the mix along with Memphis and SMU for the West Division title.
Yep.
So
yeah.
All right, Bubba, I guess, you know, hey, I guess one more announcement. Terry Gallagher will be in town this weekend. So all you Terry Gallagher groupies, you can see him there at Dowdy Ficklin. He'll be signing autographs. Ladies, feel free to flash him. He'll accept gifts. So, you know, all you Terry Gallagher groupies, get ready.
Three receptions for, I believe it was 218 yards, so something like a 72.7 yard per catch average, the single game record at East Carolina, Terry Gallagher.
That's right. That's correct. And don't forget, as he pointed out, he's our good luck charm. So, you know, you want to give a real fast, what's your predicted score for Cincinnati?
The Cincinnati defense, I'm certainly taking the Bearcats to win. They've not allowed more than 25 points in a game, with the exception of that loss to the Buckeyes at the Horseshoe. So that includes holding UCF to something like 24, 25 points. So I will say Cincinnati 38, East Carolina 13.
Yeah, I'm going to go similar. I'm going to say Cincinnati 31, East Carolina 9. And hopefully we're wrong.
Yeah, pray we're wrong.
Yep.
Prove us wrong, Pirates.
Exactly. For Dave Bridgman, go ahead.
I was just going to say, give us a reason to storm the field afterwards.
Exactly. All right, Bubba, for thanks to Al.
Chad Brindle.
Thank you. For Dave Bridgman and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Kyle Barber. You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.